Hi, it's Rob Gilbert here. We rarely start an episode of Box to Box this way, but this week is an outlier given the evolving Sam Kerr story. It goes without saying that Sam is entitled to natural justice, but we wanted to let you know that this week's episode of Stoppage Time was recorded before the news broke. Of course, we'll cover the latest in next week's main show. Till then, enjoy.
Box to Box Stoppage Time.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Great savings every day.
And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices.
Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Hello and welcome to Box Stoppage Time. You're with Rob Gilbert, Michael Edgley and Willem van Denderen for our podcast. So we go through the highlights of the past week, our teams and moments of the week and plenty more. Well, our mate Derek didn't feature in the main show. He's on the bench again this week. Hello out there to you, Derek. We'll see you next week. But in the meantime, look, Willem Edge, do you have any objection to me coming off the long run and starting off with my game of the week?
You go for it, Rob.
Please launch.
Thank you. Because Derek did last week. You know, he said he'd been saving Arsenal for a little while. And I think he gave me permission to come off the picket fences with my game of the week. Because, of course, off the back of the League Cup win and the FA Cup fifth round, it was Liverpool and Nottingham Forest, a no-brainer for me.
McAllister now tries to keep the pressure on. Nunez is there! Contribution. Darwin Nunez wins it for Liverpool.
Don't you just love it when that happens? When your team just has to win, they've got their backs to the wall against a side that just gives them trouble for no other reason than they just give them trouble. Because I read an article in the BBC that it had been 40 years and 14 matches since Liverpool had won at the City Ground. Now, obviously, Forest have been in another division for a lot of that time. But hey, you know, who wants to spoil the story with the facts? We're talking about the 9th minute of 8 minutes of stoppage time. And there's also that delicious feeling, you know, when there are two other clubs at least who are just death riding you, just waiting for that final whistle. And I speak of none other than Manchester City and, of course, Arsenal, who want you to lose. And then you win up against the odds. Now, just before the goal, the Forest faithful were saying, chanting to Darwin Nunez, "You're just a shit Andy Carroll," after Andy Carroll's sort of less than successful stint at Anfield. And then Jurgen Klopp in the post-match, who said, "I would not sing a song like that. I would not try to wind Darwin up." It was beautiful. There was a bit of controversy about it. I think you might have read there was an incorrect start. At one point, the ref, Paul Tini, gave the ball back to Quiven Kelleher when even Klopp admitted that it should have gone to Forest about 2 minutes before that goal was scored. So it might never have happened. But the same thing happened in reverse in the first half. So for me, absolute ripping game of the week. I loved watching it. I loved every bit about it. And I loved the fact that the bloke who can't score scored the match winner. Did you guys watch it at all? Or just the highlights, any of it?
Yeah, I had a look at it, Rob. I think the other highlight of that was your German accent. I'd be careful. We know Edge's woke mates listen to this show and you might just be cancelled. But no, well done, Darwin. He cops a lot of criticism, a lot of criticism. Some of it justified, but I think he's doing a pretty good job. They're right up to the necks in it. He's not Erling Haaland. He kind of needs to be if they're going to win it. I guess that is the comparison. He's right at the pointy end. But yeah, he's had the last laugh on this occasion. Not the last one, but you know, a laugh nearing the end of the season.
You look like you want to say something there, Michael. Or are you just staying out of this one?
No. Willem's had some nice reflections. I did watch the highlights. I like watching Liverpool play, despite the fact I'm an Arsenal fan. I'm always taking great interest in your side, Rob.
They were good. All right. Well, I loved it. And anyway, I mean, Haaland, he can miss. I mean, admittedly, you know, he's a jet, but that miss from, I think it was the first half of the derby was like, I mean, I could have need that one in. Anyway, not his biggest fan. Willem, what about you? What was your game of the week?
Yeah, well, I nearly got the Tijuana brass off the show last week, Rob, for saying a nice word about Spurs, and I'm going to do it again. I've got Tottenham against Crystal Palace. Palace hadn't beaten Tottenham at their ground since 97-98. Poor Hodgesaurus has gone the way of the dinosaur. Oliver Glasner has come in and he was pretty happy on the sidelines when Eberiki Eze won a free kick in the second half and buried it. A really, really nice free kick. And silence the Spurs crowd momentarily, but they are lifting in that new stadium, and they went on to score 3 goals in 11 minutes to overturn the deficit. Son and Maddison couldn't find the net, and Richarlison is out, but I think we're seeing that Ange is building that depth that he's going to need if he's going to contend in seasons to come, and then hopefully play some Champions League as well. Brennan Johnson has played a lot of stuff from the outset, but he's been sort of relegated back to the bench, but he does always seem to make an impact, and he squared up Timo Werner for his first goal. And Edge, if ever a player needs a cuddle and to be told, you're good, just do this and we'll get the best out of you, it's Timo. So that was, as I say, his first goal for the club. And Ange got a tune out of Richarlison when he was a bit flat on himself. And this is his next challenge. If he can get a proper consistent return out of Timo Werner, he will have really performed a miracle. And I do say that with respect. He's a good player. He's just, very flat on himself at times. And from there, Romero and Son, as I said, 3-11. They stay in touch with the top four. They look like they might go into the Champions League places as Villa struggled it out with Luton Town later in the afternoon. Villa ultimately won, so Spurs stay fifth, but a good come-from-behind win for my game of the week.
Good one. Well, my game of the week is I just love narratives around clubs and stories, and one of the most controversial fixtures in English Football League is when MK Dons and AFC Wimbledon play each other, Robert. I just want to sort of go through the background here, obviously. AFC Wimbledon were formed by fans after Wimbledon moved from the London base to Milton Keynes in 2002. And actually in 2005, they changed their name from Wimbledon to MK Dons. And the fans felt very disenfranchised by that. So a bunch of fans started AFC Wimbledon. And they obviously started their journey in the combined counties league, part of the English football's ninth tier. And over the years, AFC Wimbledon has rose through the divisions, eventually reaching the Football League in 2011, and doing so became the first club formed in the 21st century to reach the English Football League pyramid. The two teams, MK Dons, the original Wimbledon who moved, and the AFC Wimbledon, the fans club, first met in 2012. And up until 2017, AFC Wimbledon, they would only refer to their opponents as MK, dropping the Dons on their official club program for matches, which eventually saw them charged by the FA and a big fine ensued. The AFC Wimbledon players are really well-versed in the history lesson, dominated. They've never beaten MK Dons, but on the weekend, they dominated their opponents on Saturday. But it looked as if they wouldn't get the win despite that domination. But 4 minutes into the second half stoppage time, Lee Brown cut it back for Ronan Curtis, who swept home the winner, sparking these celebrations. Just have a listen to this. Goes on for about 45 seconds. Give it some volume. And I'll tell you what, it's just pure, unbridled emotion and joy. And I think for the fans club, who've made it all the way up the pyramid, it's a remarkable story. Their manager, AFC Wimbledon's manager, Johnny Jackson, said, "I can't put into words what's happened today. It's the highs and lows of football. Today is a reminder of why we love it, why we do it. Personally, that's the best feeling I've had in my entire career. It's not about me today. It's about Wimbledon, their fans, our football club, and us getting the moment of a lifetime."
And as,
we were magnificent.
Yeah, and I think to borrow a phrase from another sport, which in this country we love so much, the great Teddy Whitten, if you're not a fan of the Indigenous game, then just look this one up. But I think the words were, "We stuck it right up them."
You stuck it right up them.
That was something like that, wasn't it, Edge?
And obviously the celebrations in the stands were incredible. That is an incredible fixture, isn't it, Willem? Milton Keynes Dons versus their fans, basically.
Yeah, one of the clips I saw with that, one of the captions I saw with the clip of the audio you just played there, Edge, was the feeling when the team, your team, beats the team that took your team or something like that. They were happy and well deserved. That's vengeance long term cooking
Milton
in the
Keynes Dons, the Milton Keynes Dons, who are obviously playing away at AFC Wimbledon on their official Twitter account, 90+3. All they said was the home side score. they didn't even call it Wimbledon. So that's how deep the feelings run.
Yeah. And that can be a thankless task, being the social media manager when you've just had a howling loss and you've got to put a post up. 90+8, they scored.
Yeah. And it's actually worth looking at some of the replies because, the AFC Wimbledon fans well and truly give that Twitter post or X post a bit of love, Rob.
Yes, and the contrast being, of course, that the most cerebral surroundings of their neighbouring tennis club would never see that kind of behaviour generally. But they would have heard.
For all of us who love football and we go to games, but you just know when there's a goal celebration, just the fervent nature of the crowd's response. So, I mean, there wasn't a big crowd at the game. It was sold out, obviously. It's a small stadium, AFC Wimbledon, but it was they were going epileptic because it meant so much.
Yeah, no, brilliant. And I think you're going to win the box-to-box inaugural best clip award for providing just soundtrack of crowd with no subtitles, no language.
No commentary.
All right, moving on along. We've got
that could have been any clip.
Yeah, no, but we got the point. Edge set it up nicely. Well done. Okay, team of the week. So as listeners to this show will know that it's like first in best dress. So someone was always going to pick the Matildas, so I got in first. So I was the one that was there. Willem, you've mentioned your mum and your sister who really enjoyed it. You sent that photo of them wearing their green and gold. And I guess that's just the allure of this side. It has an intangible quality to it right now, and being there, 54,120 at Marvel Stadium. Now, I want to contrast it with another event I was at a couple of weeks ago at the MCG, and that was Taylor Swift. Now, the kind of vibe at the Matildas reminded me of being in that ground. It's just this uplifting feeling where there's just a lot of excitement, and there's a defining sound to the cheer, which is discernibly not male. And you don't get that at many sports where, 90%, let's say, of the fans are women. And you hear that cheer of the female voice that you don't hear in many sports. I loved it at Taylor Swift. I love being part of it at Marvel. As you guys know, it goes back to, the French World Cup. You were there where, I was, pretty pissed off with the Americans and the way they reacted to flogging Thailand 13-0 and the fact that they just kept on celebrating. It felt like they were rubbing their nose in it. And I was concerned the other night at 8-0, or as the score blew out to 8-0, that something similar might happen because the vibrancy of the crowd could easily have allowed that to spill over into the pitch. But as you made the point, Edge, this is a competitive Olympic qualifier. There's limited spots up for grabs. So you can't reasonably expect professional sports people not to be ruthless against an opposition who've never experienced anything like it. But what I can say is that I felt that the respect started to come out, and whether they talked about it as a group, whether Tony Gustafsson had alerted them to do it, or whether they just did it naturally, the team showed some respect to their Uzbek opponents by, gradually toning down the celebrations as the first half wore on. And, fortunately for the visitors, the changes to the team, to the Australian team, stifled some of the flow and the result just didn't get completely out of hand. So I think on every level, that was a successful night. Matilda's team of the week.
Yeah, fantastic. And we talked about it in the main show, just the contrast between Matilda's, the crowd diversity and the atmosphere of love and joy with the images of, young men, ripping flares on the way to the football. I know that's a superficial, very flippant comment, but it's just a really interesting contrast. And, as countries socially, culturally evolve, and the Matildas are becoming the much-loved national team of all sports at the moment, and it's just a wonderful journey. We've been on the Matildas journey when we were going to see Matildas games when there was a couple thousand people. So yeah. I think we can quite rightly talk with a lot of authority about this, and you're right to point it out, Rob. It's just a beautiful experience now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And when you see a player come out of retirement, like Michelle Heyman did, score 4 goals, and you've got to feel
and
sorry
the, and
for
her backstory, which is really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And you pointed out a podcast that is on the ABC, I think it was, with Katrina Gorry, that is worth a listen. So if you want to find a bit more about that backstory in it, just look up that podcast, Michelle Heyman, Katrina Gorry on the ABC. All right, Edge, why don't you give us your team of the week, mate?
Well, my team of the week is Sydney FC, and they're unbeaten in 7 matches now. It's been their last loss was way back in early January, and you've just got to say that your doppelganger Ufok Tele, Rob, is absolutely transformed Sydney FC since replacing Steve Corrick in November, and they just are marching up the table. They're currently in 5th, 2 points shy of MacArthur, who are in 3rd position. If their form continues, I can see them, really sort of almost trying to breach for the top of the table. And it was obviously not only are they going well, they just dismantled Western Sydney Wanderers, Wellham, didn't they? They absolutely destroyed them in all facets of the game. I think Rudin mentioned after the game that he was embarrassed. But it was the comments by Ufok Tele after the game that sort of drew my attention to why I selected Sydney FC as the team of the week. And he was referring to the importance and the impact of David Zrilic and what he's had at the club since joining the club after his spell at RB Leipzig. And he was talking to Tele, was saying, I wish he could say it was all he's doing, but he said the impact and the influence of Zrilic is in, you know, the way they're setting up the team and the training sessions of getting to that high octane press that they're playing, and you're just forcing errors, as we saw. Western Sydney made 2 errors, which Sydney received goals from. So it's just really exciting. And they do have a couple of good marquee players, Sydney FC, the Brazilians, but they've got a lot of young players as well too, who are really starting to deliver. So that is my team of the week, Sydney FC. So well done to Ufok Tele. Can they keep it going, Rob? What do you think?
Well, my man gives me good information ever since he appeared and said after being introduced as my doppelganger, he must be a good bloke. So I like him. So on that level alone, I think they can. But in all seriousness, they look like a serious side. That if you can go to Parramatta against Western Sydney at the moment under, you know, pretty hostile conditions against a very hostile coach, then you'd think that the things are turning around. And I think Vince Ricari wrote an article, this is not Bling FC anymore, is it, Willem? This is a very different football side.
Yeah, I think Ufok's line was, us good-looking blokes got to stick together, Rob, or something along those lines. No, you're spot on. Yeah, Vince wrote this up really nicely. They are 5th with a major bullet, and there was an interesting line in there. David Zrilic has been able to get in Ufok's ear. He wasn't able to get in Steve Corica's ear, and maybe that sort of rigidity from Corica that had seen him have a lot of success is the reason why he was unable to continue to roll on and adapt, and why he now finds himself shaping the Auckland side before they come in next season. I don't think the Sky Blues will catch Wellington or the Mariners. They're coming from a little bit too far back, but come grand final time, I just about expect them to be there now. I think they're almost the best side in it. My team of the week are the Melbourne Victory women. They've had a big last fortnight, 4-0 over the Wanderers, and now 5-3 over Wellington Edge. And a couple of weeks ago, you'd flagged them as a little bit of a concern under Jeff Hopkins, but he is the master of being sort of malleable and adapting and always bringing through a new sort of crop to complement the tried and true. The ledger read 6 wins, 5 draws and 5 losses, but that looks a little bit better now, and they are in the top 4. 3 of the goals against the Knicks came from the right side, crossed in, 2 of those from corners. Betty Goad, 6 weeks away, taking personal leave to complete her medical exam. She came straight back in with a brace and an assist. Alex Chidiak has come in for a degree of criticism as well. Hasn't quite worked out for her since She was, to the eye of many, maybe unfairly left on the bench a little bit too long for the Matildas at that World Cup last year, but she scored an absolute cracker that goes down as an own goal, but it was all her work. Tori Hansen and Rachel Lowe also on the score sheet. So Edge, Emily Gelnick, Emma Checker and Kayla Morrison all still there. Again, I don't, like Sydney FC, I don't think they'll win the plate, but they know all about winning grand finals, having done so 2 out of the last 3 years. So I think they're a chance.
They're a big chance, and I've just got to say that, you know, they've not had their they've not been without their problems. Mackenzie Wynatt, who's very important to them, has been signed by Seattle. She's gone to their National Women's Soccer League. So Beattie Goad, obviously, you know, she's now a medical doctor, so she's finishing her studies, and there's big question marks whether she's going to go on or not, but they've convinced her to come back for the last part of the season. So that's a bit of a straight swap, Goad in for Wynatt. And then obviously Jessica Nash and Alana Murphy, who've been big parts of the team. They're over with the young Matildas in Uzbekistan. And Elise Keller-Knight was out injured on the weekend. And a player that I'm going to shout out, one of my charges, Paige Zoyce, came in and played in the number six role. Paige, if she was at any other club, she would have played 50 games by now. But because she's at one of the most successful clubs with a deep squad, she's fighting for a spot really with Elise Keller-Knight. And you know, she just proved her quality. She came into the team and I'm a bit biased, but I think she actually made more of an impact than KK has in the previous month. And you know, Paige is another one who's just rip-roaring, ready to go. And she's just proved that if they need her for the rest of the season, that she's not out of place and she'll make a really solid contribution. So Melbourne Victory, yeah, we know Jeff Coplins can get his charges organised at the best of times. And obviously Emily Gilnick in that team makes a difference. Chidiak makes a difference. It'll be interesting to see whether Lydia Williams can get back from her injury in goal. But yeah, they're going to be okay. But Western United, they're going to be hard to knock off. They are in a great degree of form at the moment, and they've got a lot of really good players. I'm expecting Melbourne City, once the young Matildas come back, Melbourne City gets their better team on the park, they'll be competitive too. And don't forget our good friend Ante Juric, who always gets the job done at Sydney FC. They keep winning with a profile of team that's very young. Really interesting one, Willem, just to throw back at you while we're talking sort of about Melbourne Victory, is that Courtney Vine didn't participate in the Matildas Uzbekistan games for personal reasons, but has been playing for Sydney FC. Really love to know what the backstory to that is, because it's an interesting one, isn't it?
It certainly is. It is somewhat contrary to everything we've seen about the Matildas. It seems I'm not insinuating anything. I have no idea. Everyone wants to be involved, right? So everyone wants to be involved. It looks like a very happy. So it is an intriguing one, as you say.
Whatever it is, we hope it works out for Courtney Vine. Obviously, she's gone from the heights to the heights. And as you say, neither of you know anything. You're just positing the question, what is the backstory? So maybe we'll never know, but whatever happens, we hope she comes back soon. All right, hot topic. I'm sticking with the women's game. I've chosen this one not only because it's a great comeback story, but also because it highlights the injury perils of female players. And it just so happened it's at the very club our own Sam Kerr suffered the same fate.
Oh, slipped in here. Is this the moment? It is! Katerina Macario. Well, she's had to wait so long after that injury. She hasn't played since June of 2022. And she hasn't taken long to make her mark off the bench and into the net for Chelsea.
So, as the commentary said, Macario suffered her ACL injury in Lyon's final game of the 21-22 campaign on June the 1st, 2022. It was 641 days since she'd last played, 644 days since she'd scored. The Brazilian-born and raised member of the US national women's side, Katerina Macario, she signed for Chelsea from Lyon in June 2023. She debuted over the weekend in that game that we were just listening to, scored 6 minutes into that match in the 4-0 win over Leicester City. And another sort of little cherry on the top of that cake is her return is particularly good news for Emma Hayes, who is going to leave that club that she plays for right now, Chelsea, and take over the US, United States program in June. So a fabulous story. The sliding doors contrast with Sam Kerr. obviously, yeah, we hope that Sam doesn't have such a long rehabilitation, but again, it puts the spotlight on these ACL injuries and when and how long it's going to take for a medical breakthrough to identify what it is with the female knee that brings about these injuries so much more frequently than it does in men.
Yeah, good shout out, Rob. Good shout out. Do you want me to continue with my hot topic?
Go for it, mate.
Okay, my hot topic is the APL leadership and their public engagement. We've just seen on the weekend the issues surrounding Western Sydney Wanderers fan group and Brisbane Roar, and we just get like a very short statement out of head office which says, you know, all the things that you would expect it to say. There's going to be an investigation. But I just question why Stephen Conroy, the chairman, and Garcia, the commissioner, don't come out and express their own views and start to give the game a focal point of leadership. Because silence is the worst response in this situation, because it just allows the tabloid nature of the media to get on the front foot and punish the game when, we really need the leaders to defend the game or call out bad behaviour as appropriately. Yes, we don't want them to go off half-cocked, but I just think that this head-in-the-sand approach by the leadership, and we've seen it around the decisions they made with Keep Up when they restructured the organisation. Even when Stephen Conroy assented to the chairman's role, his public comments have been few and far between. If you just compare them to the leadership in the NRL and the AFL, we just don't hear enough from them. And as a result of that, I think the fans are losing confidence in the direction of the APL at the moment, because they just don't articulate their strategy, concerns and feelings enough. I don't know what you think about that, Willem.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. That initial statement that comes out, that is there's a problem here, we're onto it, there's going to be a better statement later. But it just never comes. Like, I don't think we're going to hear any more from the APL on that particular matter, going off the track record of this current group, i.e. post Danny Townsend. It was good to hear from Nick Garcia on Simon Hill and Alex Brosk's program, The Global Game, on SEN. We've been submitting many, many media requests to have either Garcia or Conroy on. I know Simon and his producer there, they've been through the process to have the privilege to speak to these guys. I would direct listeners to that interview if you want to hear a little bit more. And we had a bit of a chat about it amongst the three of us, and we weren't overly impressed, but at least we'd heard from him, Nick Garcia, that is, months on. So, no, it's silence is the worst thing. It just makes you feel like either they don't care or it's just not important, or, yeah, the vacuum leaves you feeling a little bit lonely, Edge, as opposed to at least having a statement either way.
And unfortunately, it's the fourth estate, a flourishing fourth estate in the media that allows for the conversation to continue and for administrators to be called to task, which we, for better or for worse, we see in the two main football sporting bodies in this country, in the AFL and the NRL, cricket as well. We see it. There's a lot of commentary, a lot of questions, a lot of pressure builds up. But, in the absence of Keep Up and a lot less copy in the News Limited and Nine publications, that you've got to go searching for it. And if you've got to go searching for content, that means you've got to go searching for the questions. And so we play a small part in that ecosystem, and we also rely on the media managers at the clubs to support us. And we can all say, without throwing anyone under the bus right now, that some clubs are a lot better than others. Some clubs always get back to you. They always respond. They communicate. Others, you've got to chase and hunt down, and you think, guys, we're looking for publicity here. So the fact that there's not a lot of communication coming out of the head office is not lost on me when you contrast it with the club land as well. All right, Willem, why don't you wrap us up, mate?
A positive one to close on the A-League, on the field. We have, I think, over the 15 years, and you'll be able to speak to this in terms of how it was in the NFL, NSL, where am I at, Edge, how the striking stocks in terms of Australian players just hasn't been there in the A-League era, given that structurally it's set up with a 10 to 12 team league and there's five marquees, so you're likely to go and look overseas with that, you know, that number nine or that main striking role. But I think we're in a really good period at the moment. Apostolos Stamatopoulos, nobody's idea of a star when he was with Adelaide and Western United, has come back to the league after 18 months in Greece and has gone nuts, 14 goals in 18. Adam Taggart, I speak about him every week. He's got 12 in 17 for the Glory and he's having his best spell since he won the Golden Boot in South Korea about 5 years ago. And then we've got the younger guys coming through as well. Thomas Waddingham at Brisbane at 18. He scored 6 in 17. Noah Botic, who's been a player of promise for a long time, is finally starting to show some return. 22 years old. He's got 5 in 19. Luka Jovanovic shares duties at Adelaide with Hiroshi Ibusuki, the import, so there's a little bit of a blend of the two schools of thought there at Adelaide. He's got 3 in 16 and stood up to take a really impressive penalty to Wellington on the weekend. So yeah, I think there's a few coming through, which is nice. And then the one who's having issues is Jamie McLaren, and that's never been the case. I think that's probably indicative of City as a whole as opposed to just him, and there's persistent rumours that he might be out the door to Auckland, but I don't think we have to stress too much. I mean, he, as we know, give him the ball in a decent area and he'll score. But yeah, a positive one to close out, Rob. I think this is a time where we need to enjoy these young strikers coming through, because for so long, they just wouldn't have an opportunity, the likes of your Waddinghams, Jovanovic's and Botic's.
Yeah, and great to see on home soil as well in the domestic competition. And we know that Arnie will pick players from the domestic competition, not a lot of them, but if players are just knocking down the door, then they will get an opportunity somewhere along the line in the squad. And perhaps those two ties against Lebanon might be the opportunity, where obviously you never want to underestimate an opponent, particularly in a World Cup campaign. But some of these boys' names might end up on those lists. All right, let's wrap it up, guys. Willem, excellent work again, mate. You have a good week between now and when we next catch up.
Will do. Off to Alkmaar to hassle Matt Ryan in goal. See if he can come over and say hello as well.
Well, you know you could hassle. Who's that bloke who's the number two keeper over there that doesn't like Matt? Is he still there?
Not sure if he's still there. Not sure. Yeah. I'll harass him.
Yeah, if he is still there, find out. Just double check. Edge, thank you.
Thank you, Rob and Willem and listeners. And look forward to next week. And enjoy your week of football as some of our competitions they're getting to the pointy end, the business end, as we say.
Yeah, absolutely. And to our good friend Adam Maloney for pulling it all together, as you always do. If you're listening to this and you're hearing some nice tight edits and the sound just crisp as you are used to on the show, it's all because of that man who is behind the metaphorical glass, making it all sound the way that it should do. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Box, Stoppage Time and Offside, wherever you get your podcasts. Tweet us at Box2BoxNTS and follow us on X, like us on Facebook, and please make sure you join us throughout the week as our podcasts drop and we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the world game.